music together. Let's make sweet harmony. Oh, let's make music together, baby. You take the dough, I'll take the ray. You better hang on to me. We are birds of a feather, looking for the right key. Oh, let's make music together, baby. 'Cause only music makes a man free.
Welcome to Filmoscopy, a quaint little podcast who's upgraded to Skype. of three friends reviewing movies and talking about whatever the hell they want to talk about that day. And we'll just see how much doesn't get cut out. I am Lance. I am today's host. And my fellow two ghosts of the Titanic, Cody.
What's up?
And Owen.
Get me out of this fucking submarine!
Okay, you know, we're gonna go ahead and do a quick little dive on this.
A dive.
I didn't mean to say it that way.
Oh my god. Damn.
I really didn't mean for that point, okay? But you know, I feel bad for the loss of life. I do realize that four of the five people were very, very rich. One of them was the son of one of the people that was very, very rich, of the five people that died on this submersible vehicle that was trying to make the Titanic. And they probably met their money through, you know, not so, like, honest ways. But, you know, that's life. I wanted to just discuss real quick the complete stupidity of these people, of this Ocean Gate Corporation, wherever the hell it is. You know, they were given warnings back in 2018 that this wasn't going to work the way they were going to do it. And they fired the guy who gave them the warning, and they had 30 officials inside that, they call it the community of deep sea exploration experts and all that, and all those people told them this isn't going to work, and they still went ahead and went with it.
Yeah.
Evidently, this wasn't the first dive. So. Yeah,
the funniest thing is, I haven't heard about it until relatively recently. Like, the first thing I heard about it was, hey, did you guys see that submarine that's been lost? So I didn't even know anything else about it or anything. What were some of the, like, other shit that was wrong with the submarine?
The fact it wasn't a submarine.
Like, I know it was piloted by, like, a fucking Mad Catz controller. Like, they got the "here's your controller, bro."
Titanium controller and fucking, like, flexiglass.
Yeah, a lot of the components were just, like, straight up. Like, there was a reporter or whatever that was there for some news station that they were, like, walking him through, like, what the thing was made out of. It was CBS. He's like, yeah, I got this from Camp World or whatever, and like a lot of it was just like off the shelf stuff that they kind of just like threw together, and my gosh, dude, like, I don't know. And even like in that news report, they even like read a lot of like what the waiver says, and it's just like basically like, you know, shedding them of responsibility if like someone dies or gets hurt or whatever. It's just, I don't know. If you go to one of those things like that, it's already kind of like an iffy situation. But if they're like, yeah, man, we control it with this Logitech controller, it's like, I don't think so.
I mean, getting in this little submarine, like, everybody has to lay crossways so they don't bump into each other. This wasn't like a submarine like Hunt for Red October. This thing was the size of, like, maybe a minivan.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I mean, it's just fucking stupid. Like, You pay $250,000 for this.
I guess
to go sit down in this death trap, and they didn't even make it to the Titanic. I'm like, I'm confounded by the stupidity. Like, you have like four businessmen who have obviously cut corners and, you know, made their wealth in life, and they're not stupid, but you're stupid enough to get in this tin can of death. and he drugged that kid along. Like, holy shit. I mean, he was just fucking stupid. Like, for a ship, I don't understand. For a ship that's, like, half gone, there's nothing left of the ship. It's decaying. You know, all the treasure that was down there has been gone. There's been hundreds of dives towards this thing. You know, and...
Well, what baffles me too about it is, like, why the fuck would you want to go down there just to stare at live video footage on a computer screen? Because it's not like they're they don't have windows they can look out of to see the
actually,
anyway.
Didn't the front of it have like a plexiglass window or something?
I think the front did, yeah. But like, you think all five of those?
It's so fucking dark. So.
Yeah, and it's dark and like, I don't know, man.
They showed
just,
a video of workers putting it together with torque wrenches. Not like an industry level like gun that would bolt it in like it's supposed to. A torque wrench. Like if you were underneath your car doing an oil change and you need just a little bit more torque, you put a torque wrench on it and then you get the motherfucker off. That's all they were using. And then they even tested it 7 days before they made the dive. And they had issues with it then. And then someone had a picture posted of it. It had two dents in the front of the hull, like it was already having pressure issues. Everyone knew. Yeah,
that's what I heard. I heard it.
Yeah,
just
everyone
imploded.
Knew the thing imploded that day. Like they just weren't telling the media this. Of course, I mean, there's some other things that somebody had posted. Go ahead, Cody.
They did have a theory too that it because I guess it had lost. Obviously, it lost connection with the receiver up on the surface or in the ship or whatever that takes it down there, but. It's like, so they're like, well, maybe it's just lost and we can try and find them. But it's like, dude, like they said like for five people in that little thing, there's only enough oxygen for like maybe what, 3 or 4 days or something. So like, even if it didn't implode, they would have had to make some like, they would have had to make some like harrowing decisions, right? Because like, what do? You all just hope that someone finds you in those 4 days, or do you start like literally killing other people in this submersible so that you can save oxygen?
I think.
And granted, now we've.
Go
ahead.
No, you're good.
They found a piece of it or whatever floating. So like, obviously, it most likely imploded. So they were probably more than likely all killed instantly.
Instantly, yeah, that's probably your best bet at this point. Implode instantly because I mean
they had the people talking, you know, the Navy or Coast Guard or whatever, and when they lost contact, other signals picked up an explosion-like noise, but they didn't know for sure because they also heard noises of like knocking on the ocean floor. And they thought maybe that's them trying to like call out for help. We need help. In reality, they didn't make it.
More than likely,
it
was just
the
debris. Yeah, more than likely that knocking sound was just debris, like all like kind of like clinging together.
Yeah, and when you see something implode, it becomes like you crush a fucking can. Like you die instantly.
Yeah.
The knocking sound was just two dolphins fucking. It wasn't. Even.
Yeah, but there's no like. And someone said, like, how I watched some video, and he says, well, everyone was watching the submarine story. What else was happening in the world? And J.P. Morgan, that bank company, set up like a $400 billion grant for a new bank in Ukraine to help them pay for their damages or some shit like that. But it's some all like crooked shit.
Oh, my God.
No, it's serious. Like this actually happened. Like, there's a news article for it, but no one's paying attention.
Right, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that you're not telling the truth or that it's fake or whatever. I'm just... I can't believe it. Like, I don't know. Whatever. Like, that's a whole different topic.
It's just interesting that... I don't know. The way this... I just can't believe... Like, just looking at this thing, you're like, this is a coffin.
Yeah.
Like, and the guy was like, and I feel like, I don't know if he was just this stupid or this naive, I guess is the better word. Obviously, he's not stupid. He's the CEO of a company. His wife, have both of you guys seen the Titanic movie?
Yeah.
Okay, you remember the ending? You had that old couple hugging each other as the cabin's filling with water.
I don't remember that shot. Specifically,
if you Yeah, but there's a shot at the end of the movie as the boat is taken on water. You have this old couple laying in their cabin holding each other in bed, and they're crying, and it's a real emotional scene. Well, they're based off of a real-life couple that did die in their cabin on the Titanic. Their great-great-granddaughter is the CEO of this Ocean Gate company. And, like, they were warned. Like, that's what's not really talked about in the Titanic. The captain was warned, hey, there's icebergs ahead. And he decided to go full force ahead on a moonless night. Like, I mean, it could have been avoided if he had just, like, slowed the ship down and stopped it. But he didn't want to do that. These people right here, I guess, were working on a, I don't know, budget or a time crunch wanting to get this done. You have rich people saying we want to go down there. I am just completely and, you know, they even backed out of, like, getting regulated by, like, professionals or something like that. Like, yeah, their safety concerns. Because they're right. Like, most of the times when you have issues, it's captain failure, not mechanical failure. Like, you guys completely set yourself up for this.
Yeah, and they had to have gone through some kind of loophole to not have, you know, actual regulations put in place on this thing. But, yeah, let's not forget
it's just amazing, something like this would still happen, you know?
Yeah. Let's not forget that my favorite director of all time decided that he needed to, like, just, like, humble brag about going down to the Titanic.
Well, like, here's 30-something times. I will say this, though. And, you know, me and you have both shit on Cameron for his takes on comic book movies, and then he goes around making another Avatar movie.
I don't think you're a real film fan if you don't have a 3D television like I do. It's like, shut the fuck up. Yeah,
seriously, dude, shut the hell up.
Have you guys watched the new Avatar?
No, not yet.
Oh, God, it's like the same fucking movie again. It's literally just Avatar again.
Yeah, well, so. I'm probably never going to watch it. I have no interest in the story going forward. But, no, he was on there on CNN talking, and he made a lot of good points. Of course, he put it in like someone who's looking at a story from a filmographer's point of view. Like, I can't help but notice the parallels of this and the Titanic, with the captain going ahead with all the icebergs, knowing that they were there, and them being warned, and them going ahead and doing it.
Yeah,
and it's like, all right, got a point. Dude, it's not that fucking deep.
Well, you know, he's probably thinking about it because he's going to make Titanic 2.
Oh, God. I mean, this is going to be a movie one day or a documentary, because this is just fucking mental. But he made a good point. You know, he did do 33 dives to the Titanic himself. Yeah. You know, he had a submarine or submersible vehicle made for this. And he said that they were planning this thing out for 3 years before they even started building this thing. This company rushed out and started building this thing when they formed.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's been to the deepest part of the ocean himself, the Marina Trench or whatever.
So Marianas he made good Trench.
Points. Like, but, yeah. And,
The Marinara.
But no, he said, what else
he's
did
like,
he
look,
say?
He's like, look, I've been to the deepest depths and stared deep into the eyes of Cthulhu.
lost my fucking mind.
But there was a an exploration deep sea guy that was supposed to be on the crew, and he left because of his concerns. They still had one person left, and this dude was in charge of the French Navy at one point. And they had interviews, or an interview at least, him talking about, like, the issues. And he even said in the video, he goes, "Yeah, you're dead before you know there's trouble. Like, it starts happening before you even realize it. And if you start imploding." Like that, like, it all happens in milliseconds. Like, they said within like 30 milliseconds, which is a half a second, obviously, it's done, it's dead, there's no way. And as small as this thing was, they all got caved in on each other. Yeah. Like, there's probably not even a physical body part that's not, like, mashed. It's not fish food.
I mean, and I guess, obviously, you know, like you said earlier, it's tragic, right, that this even happened. But I guess at the very least, avoidable. You know, yeah, it was avoidable. But at the very least, you know, they all went so quick that they didn't suffer. It wasn't the worst case scenario where they were all down there and oxygen was running out, and you know, not only slowly suffocating but losing their minds from like oxygen deprivation, you know.
To be fair though, do we know? I don't think we have any news yet that they're actually gone. I mean, like, you know, it might as well be. I know, but
well, I mean, hell, by now,
they know for a fact. They know for a fact it imploded. They knew Sunday on Father's Day that it imploded. Oh, okay. It was like within 2,000 feet of the Titanic, but the pressure of it, of the ocean, was just, it just crushed them. There was nothing. They weren't going to make it no matter what happened, you know. And it's just crazy. It's just like, fuck, there's just no way. There is no way that I wouldn't do it
on James Cameron's fucking submersible or whatever, let alone one that's just fucking slapped together, you know.
Look, I can watch somebody else film what's underneath the ocean. I can watch whatever else is in space. I could watch people film shit from the sky. I don't have to be there. We have HD now. Cameras. HD video equipment. Yeah. I can see it better than your eyes are processing it on my television.
I just don't understand what the fascination is. It has to be the same sort of deal how like a lot of rich people pay to go climb Mount Everest, which basically they're just like, these days it's not even like they're climbing Mount Everest themselves, they're paying someone to like damn near carry them up the mountains just so they can say that they did it.
It's still, you know, fucked up too up there, because like there's all those like, I don't know if you've read into it or seen anything about it, but there's all those like dead people, like,
yeah, because
there, they can't get them down.
Yeah, they just leave them when they die, they just leave them up there. And not only that, but I don't know, have you ever seen a video of like, there's literally like a line at the top of Mount Everest of people waiting to like get to the peak.
So they can take their picture. Like, imagine sitting there, you're running out of oxygen, you're fucking like, you know, you're like really weak because you're so high up in altitude, you're just waiting in fucking line. Like, how awful does that sound?
It's so stupid. I just don't understand it. And then of course, you know, let's also not forget all the garbage that they've left on the mountain, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I think it's just, and you have so much money that you don't worry about, like, you don't even think about consequences anymore. Like,
yeah,
there's nothing, no action is going to like leave an imprint on your life or affect your life in any way.
Yeah, and I mean,
these
are the
things that these people are like this. And unfortunately, that kid got caught up in the crosshairs of it. But this company's done. And it should be done.
Yeah.
I don't know if this, like, I sent you that text, and I was curious that night. I Googled some more SpaceX shit from Mr. Musk. And, you know, they're still wanting to send people to Mars.
Yeah.
And on the Wikipedia article, he says that, oh, there's a safe way of returning the people if something goes wrong. No, there's not.
No, there's not.
There's a 7-month, like, travel time to get there. We don't have enough fuel to storage on anything. You can't storage fuel on it to refill the fucking spaceship to bring you back. It's a one-way trip. You're not coming
right
home.
And even if we had the technology at this point to somehow get fuel out there to return, there's such a small window of time that the Earth and Mars are actually close enough for that trip. That's what, like, the movie The Martian is about. Like, he misses the window to come home, and this is like, well, fuck, like, I'm stuck here and have to figure out how to survive, right? But, like, yeah, no, I guarantee you the first few trips, there will be people that go to Mars, no matter what. I mean, it may be a few rich people, but more than likely it'll be like NASA astronauts that fully understand, like, this is a suicide mission going here, and there's no coming back. So it's just one of those things that for exploration in the future to take place, somebody has to be the one to do it. But going down to the Titanic, no one has to do that. You know, like, there's plenty of photographs out there and video of the Titanic under the ocean.
It's, and you know, the whole Mars thing, I'm like, look, guys, Mars is what the Earth is going to be in like 200 years. You know, if we die out quick enough as humans, the Earth will regenerate somehow. It will have life. You know, it will recover from what we've done to it.
Yeah.
But Mars is a dead planet. Oh boy, they found some bacteria on the fucking surface. Dude, I got bacteria on my fucking toilet seat. And let me tell you something. I don't mean I want to fucking put my face on it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that it would take.
They want to terraform. Like, they want to terraform the planet to make it like Earth 2. This sounds like something from fucking Alien.
Yeah, it's definitely science fiction at this point. But, you know, several generations from now, who knows? But it'll never be that in our lifetime. I fully think that we will see somebody sent to Mars in our lifetime. But
yeah,
I don't
probably
think...
so, because it's fucking stupid. But this whole, like, everybody thinks, like, man, we're going to... Like, everybody wants it to be like Star Trek and Star Wars. Like, we can just go galaxy to galaxy. That's never going to happen. We're not close enough. I don't think the human race is going to live long enough to even build something so sophisticated to get to that point.
No, we'll destroy this planet and all die off before we ever get close enough to that.
I know, and the fucking, like, the stars, like, that we see are already dead. Like, we're seeing it, like, light years ago, what we're seeing the reflection of. Most of these stars are already dead at the point where they're actually located. So it's like, I don't understand. Like, I understand the whole space exploration thing, but we know what's on these planets. The last four planets are nothing but gas balls held together by gravity. There's the only solid surface they have is their fucking core. You can't land on them. There is nothing there. Mars is what Earth used to be. Venus is fucking... like a fucking, like a boiling pot of water that can't sustain any kind of fucking life. And Mercury's half cold, half hot because it's facing the sun. But, like, there's nothing else, like, out there. And Pluto is just a frozen rock that was probably some fucking moon that got pushed off, like, years ago, obviously. Well, like, many millions of years ago, or whatever. But, like, there's nothing in the solar system that's sustainable. I understand everybody thinks, oh, but there's aliens and shit like that. Dude, we got other fucking problems. Aliens don't want to come here. You know why? Because our planet's fucking nuclear. They can see that shit from outer space if they come to visit here. I don't hear many people talking about aliens visiting the planet anymore because they know this planet's a fucking ticking time bomb and it's a lost cause. So... we have enough money on this planet to fix this planet's issues. They're not going to do it. They're going to use up all of our resources as a planet, and then all the poor people are going to die out while the rich people will try to go to fucking Mars for some fucking reason. Because I guess everybody watched The Martian and thinks, yeah, we can plant some shit there.
Yeah.
I get so frustrated with this shit. I'm like, people, this isn't logical. Like, even me, I don't have much logic. When I'm sitting here calling you out for something stupid, it's fucking bad. I'm going to tell you this right now. I just have this, like, these people, like, five guys went down to the Titanic. And I'm like, how did you not think that, oh, this is it. I want to see the ship. You didn't even see the ship. You paid $250,000 to fucking die, and you didn't even see the fucking ship.
Yeah.
I mean, holy fuck, man. You can't fix stupid. Whether you're blinded by greed or blinded by, like, some desire, you know, you're just gonna fucking, like, you're gonna do it whether it kills you or not, and it killed these people. And, you know, a lot of people are like, well, good for them, because they're, like, you know, they're billionaires and shit like that. Dude, look, I would rather be in their position than my position right now. I'd rather be fucking a billionaire. Everybody's like, well, money doesn't fix all your issues. No, but it fucking helps. You know, I would like to sit there and think, you know, $250,000, that's not a lot of money, that's fine. But, you know, I'm not in that position, obviously. But it's astounding to me that these, like, astute businessmen that have made so much money would sit there and look at this tin can. Look like something. What is that? The school bus that used to explore everything. Was it a fucking magic school bus? Yeah, this fucking magic submarine, and you're looking at this thing. You know what? It's amazing. They streamlined a submarine process. No, they didn't streamline it. The guy said, "I want to be looked at as a visionary." He said some famous person said, you're most known for the rules you break. Well, I had to break a lot of rules to do this. No, you fucking cut corners. Yeah, these weren't rules. These were like regulations, man. There's a fucking difference between stealing money from your grandma and like, you know what? I think I can put plexiglass on this thing. We're going to go 30,000 feet down in the water too. No. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me. I'm like, the more I think about it, it's like, how can you be so fucking stupid? My bird is smarter than that, and my bird tries to eat paint. You know, it's just fucking crazy, dude. It's just, let's get. Yeah, why? Well, yeah, we know you do. So you need to calm down, everybody.
You know who else?
Go ahead. Sorry.
You know who else had a desire to leave Disney? Was Don Bluth.
Ooh, do you have a do you have some information for me, Cody, when we get into this that I don't know about?
Well, I'd have to dive into it a little bit, but I know that Don Bluth was originally like an animator at Disney, right?
And, okay, cool. Well, maybe we should talk about the movie we're doing first before we get into that. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, we are covering today 1989's All Dogs Go to Heaven. Now, I will say this. Cody is a visionary. He's the one that had the balls to do it first. He picked a cartoon movie. And I was like, you know, I kept debating. Maybe I should do something else. But I was like, no, I really want to do All Dogs Go to Heaven. So, I picked this movie. I have a backstory from my experiences of this movie that are happy memories of me. And we'll go around real quick and talk about our first experience with this movie. I'm pretty sure this is Cody's second watching of this all time, and this is probably Owen's first, but we'll just make sure. So, Owen, sir, was this your first experience with the movie?
No, I actually have seen this before. I was really young when I watched it for the first time, so I didn't really remember any of it on the go-around except kind of the beginning. And his little buddy, his little wiener dog buddy. I remember his voice. That's about it.
Oh, boss! that was killer. Hey, bossy, when we do this, he's like, "Shut up!"
Oh no, not killer.
Oh, itchy. I know, itchy. Yeah, I did killer's voice. Like, you mean this? And he pours all the ketchup in his hand. He's like, "Oh," and he passes out because he gets squeamish. Yeah. All right, Cody.
Is that what happens? I thought he like nutted or something.
No,
I was like, why the fuck did he just like go? Oh.
No, because he looked down at it and saw, like, he got himself so wrapped up in it that his blood that he passed out. Like, he talks a big game, but obviously he's a puss. So,
yeah.
All right, Cody, was this your first experience, sir?
No, I feel like I've seen at least bits and pieces of it as a kid, probably whenever it came on TV, but I didn't really, I barely remembered anything from it. Literally, the only thing I could remember was what Charlie looks like. So watching it may as well have been my first time watching it.
Okay. Let's make music together, baby. Sorry, we're gonna put that song in this episode because it's addicting to me. Well, I don't remember the first time I ever watched this movie, but my grandmother gave me a VHS tape that she had recorded for me. It had Bambi and it had All Dogs Go to Heaven on it. And this is when, you know, cable was like, you had to have a cable box, and to have the extra stuff you had to pay for the extra stuff. And my grandmother had HBO, so she had recorded these two movies on HBO for me. And you know, when you record on a VHS, for anybody young enough that doesn't know what the hell I'm talking about, they give you labels that you like put on the long side of the VHS and on the middle of the VHS where you can label it what you recorded. Well, some of them used to have like little tiny, like, you know, the mailbox stickers, when you put your last name on the mailbox, you stick it on there.
Yeah.
You know, like little squares. Well, my grandmother had put with these little tiny, like they fit on a VHS tape, but these little tiny square stickers, and she had spelled out Lance's Tape, Bambi, and All Dogs Go to Heaven. So I had that tape since, you know, at least 5 years old, and I still have it in my room in my dad's house somewhere. But that was like, like my first experience having the movie, and like I'm sure I had watched it before, but I watched it on that VHS tape, and I thought, I mean, I loved it. I mean, I still love it. And it's not, I know it's not a great animated movie. We'll get into that, but it's it holds a lot of memories to me, and that song, "Let's Make Music," is completely like stuck in my head when I get done watching this movie for like a couple of days. And I'm okay with it. I don't sit there and go like, "No, this shit sucks," but it's pretty good. So that was my first experience. All right, so we will, let me go over the cast, the director, and I will let Cody get into the info about Mr. Don Bluth.
Don Bluth.
And Don Bluth. So this movie, All Dogs Go to Heaven, came out in 1989, and November 17th, 1989. So I was a year and 3 months when this shit came out in the United States, and it came out February 1990 for the United Kingdom and April in Ireland. And it had a budget of $13 million. It only made $27.1 million. And our astute Rotten Tomatoes has a 44 approval rating on it. And it has a 50 on Metacritic, which is interesting because usually Metacritic is not higher than Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. What's the deal with the weird rating and shit going? Like, why did people hate this movie so much?
I think because it was unfavorable comparisons to The Little Mermaid. Like, it has a disjointed narrative, and like, I think
it's
very
dark.
I'm reading it right now, but
like, that's the only thing I think anybody could like for a family movie. I think this movie is really sad.
It's pretty dark too, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, part of that's not even the movie's fault. Like, I don't know, the ducky voice actor thing, like who plays the little girl, that shit kind of gets me. That's kind of fucked up.
Oh well, yeah, I got something for you on her too, unfortunately. So we'll go ahead and do the cast real quick, and then we'll get Cody to go in his little spiel. But Mr. Burt Reynolds, a Smokey and the Bandit himself, is Charlie B. Barkin, a brash German Shepherd and a former con artist. And Dom DeLuise plays Itchy Ford. He's played in a variety of stuff. There's, I don't want to go that deep into it. I apologize to any Dom DeLuise fans. Dom actually reprises the voice of Itchy in All Dogs Go to Heaven 2, and he also does an All Dogs Go to Heaven TV show. So, well, here we go. We'll go ahead and get into this because, like, Vic Tayback plays Carface Carruthers. I like Carface. Like, morons! They're all the morons. So, yeah, and there's probably more people that people would, like, I guess, pick up on, but I don't see, like, names that stick out to me. But Judith Barsighi plays Anne Marie, the 7-year-old orphan with the ability to talk and understand animals. Okay, so let's get into this real quick.
Oh no.
Yeah. So she was obviously a child actor. She was, let's see, casting records who were younger than her actual age. Let's see how old she was when she passed away.
I think she was
9. She was 10 years old, yep. And
Jesus.
So, oh boy, I don't know. I'm just gonna go ahead and read this stuff off Wikipedia. I don't really know how to handle this kind of thing. It's pretty sad. So as her career increased, her father was an alcoholic and became increasingly angry and would routinely threaten to kill himself, his wife, and her, the daughter. His drinking led to 3 arrests for drunk driving. In December 1986, Maria reported his threats, and I'm assuming that's her mother. Reported his threats and physical violence towards her to the police. After the police found no physical signs of abuse, she decided not to press charges against him, meaning that the charges wouldn't stick anyway, and she's probably trying to lessen him getting angry at her. After the incident, her dad reportedly stopped drinking but continued to threaten Maria and Judith. His various threats included cutting their throats as well as burning down the house. He also reportedly hid a telegram informing Maria that a relative in Hungary had died. in an attempt to prevent her from leaving the United States with Judith. So, I guess her mother was from Hungary. I didn't obviously go into that details. The physical violence continued, and with Judith telling a friend that her father threw pots and pans at her, resulting in a nosebleed. So, boy, oh boy. They took Judith to a child psychologist, and she identified severe physical and emotional abuse, and they reported to the Child Protection Services. And I'm pretty sure, I'm trying to get to this point right here. The investigation was dropped after Maria assured the caseworker that she intended to begin divorce proceedings, and that she and Judith were going to move to a Panorama City apartment. I don't know why I can't say that. She had recently rented as a daytime haven from him. Maria's friends urged her to follow through with the plan, but she hesitated due to her fear of losing the family home and belongings. July 28, 1988, the Los Angeles Times reported that three people were found dead in apparent murder-suicide, that the bodies were believed to be of Judith, her mother, and her father. And the article was quoted, Police Lieutenant Warren Knowles as saying, as a flammable liquid, likely gasoline, had been poured on the bodies of Maria and Judith by her dad, and his body was found in the garage dead of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. And neighbor says she heard the gunshot ring about 8:30 in the morning, prompting her to call the police and all that stuff. So, her final film was All Dogs Go to Heaven, and it was released posthumously in November 1989. I mean, over a year and 3 months after she had been killed. And Don Bluth, in an interview, praised her as being absolutely astonishing, and she understood verbal direction even for the most sophisticated situations. And the closing credits song, Love Survives, was dedicated in her memory, and at the credits it does say in memory of her. So, yeah. The movie is dark, but unfortunately it had, like, it looks like a dark situation. At least, you know, touching it through her, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's just kind of fucked up. Like, you know, a 10-year-old actress who seemed to be, you know, having a chance for a career, and her psychotic father, you know. I guess maybe, I don't know if he was losing control of the situation, why he felt like he needed it, or maybe he was just mentally ill. Who knows? But, yeah. So, unfortunately, you know, hopefully we'll talk about more funny things at this point, but it's kind of sad.
Yeah. It's just that had colored the ending of this movie for me when I had realized that it was Ducky's voice actor. It also kind of taints A Land Before Time as well a little bit, but you know, I don't know.
Did she play Land Before Time?
What'd you say?
Who? What was it? I haven't watched Land Before Time. I don't know any of the voice actors.
She plays one of the little dinosaurs in that.
Oh, does she? Okay, I've seen the first one. I know that, but I didn't know. That's crazy.
Yeah, and you know, they made like a shitload of sequels to A Land Before Time, so I think they had to replace her as the series went on. But yeah, I don't know. I loved A Land Before Time, so that was one of my favorite movies as a kid. But this one, I just feel like it's sadder because it's posthumous. So.
Yeah, it just sucks, man. Like, I didn't realize it until I watched this movie a couple weeks ago, and I looked at the voice actress, the Wikipedia page. Obviously, it's what I go to, and you know, they showed that. Like, I went to the voice. I didn't realize that she had passed away, because I mean, I know Burt Reynolds in this movie, but like, I didn't think about anybody else, and it was just crazy to see this little girl get killed. Like, you know, like the way she's 10 years old, and she got killed like 27 days after I was born. So it's just kind of nuts thinking, like, you know, you kind of put things together in life. You're like, wow, that person died at this and this point in time and shit like this. It's just kind of weird, but it's really sad. Like, when I read that, I was like, man, it kind of took a little bit of like the breath out of me a little bit. Like, damn, man, just. Just sad. But anywho, like, other than that, like, you know, anybody watching or listening to us, if you want to look at the Wikipedia page, it has the other voice actors. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I just don't have an interest in covering all of them. So if you have an interest in who played who, if you watch this movie, Wikipedia has them all, or you can go to IMDb and see what else they played. I'm sure like they've a lot of them played in a lot of things I've watched. But, you know, other than Burt Reynolds, I didn't really recognize any of the voices. So, anyway, yeah. Cody, sir, you had a little something on Mr. Don Bluth.
Yeah, so I don't know what the exact situation was with him leaving Disney, but he began his career as a Disney animator. And the first film he actually worked on...
he directed Land Before Time, too.
Yeah, he directed... Sorry. Well, Land Before Time was... that was when he started his own animation studio, right? Yeah. So, yeah. The Secret of Nim was his first film under the animation studio, and but when he worked with Disney, he was an artist on Sleeping Beauty. He worked on Robin Hood as an animator. He worked on The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh as an animator. He was a directing animator for The Rescuers. He worked on Pete's Dragon. He worked on The Fox and the Hound, and that was the last Disney film that he made or he worked on before leaving and starting his own animation studio. And which, like I said, the first film would have been The Secret of Nim. That's why, like, when you look at the animation for at least in All Dogs Go to Heaven, and it's probably similar with a lot of his other films, especially in this era. But it does have like that classic Disney animation look to it, but with a just a hint of like something different, right? Like I think the facial animations on the people are a lot more exaggerated in this film versus like what they were in like those old Disney movies. They're a lot more subtle in the Disney movies. But and I also wonder if, and I don't know if you two picked up on it, but Judith's character, I can't remember her name.
Anne Marie.
She looks a lot like Snow White. Like if Snow White was a child. And I wonder if that was intentional, not only because of his Disney background, but also because like she can talk to animals. Like Snow White, you know, Snow White kinda like sings to animals and they kind of like they, you know, follow her around or whatever. So I wonder if it was like a kind of a nod to that. But yeah, I mean, that's really all I got about his past. I just find it interesting that he was a Disney animator before doing his own thing. And then of course he goes and does his own thing, and a lot of his movies are very like dark and they deal with heavy themes. I mean, hell, The Land Before Time, all of their parents die, right? So yeah,
like right at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, and if I remember right, An American Tale is sort of like
the entire setup for An American Tale is like kind of dark.
Isn't it like a Nazi Germany allegory or something?
They're in the 19th century. They're in 19th century like Russia, like anti-Semitic. There were like anti-Semitic pogroms and shit like back then, and stuff like that. So
I guess I was misremembering because that was another movie I'd seen like once or twice as a little kid, but didn't really remember a lot about.
Yeah, but it touches on basically the same themes. I mean, if they made it about what you were saying, it would have been pretty much about just as dark, I guess. You know.
Yeah.
So. Sorry, I wasn't trying to be silent. Like I didn't really care.
No, you're good. Also, want to mention he also did make several video games as well. The most popular of which would be Dragon's Lair, which I think pretty much everybody knows what Dragon's Lair is. But
I don't explain it to me like I'm four.
Oh, do you really not know what Dragon's Lair is?
No, Cody, I do not. If it's not WCW on NES or Mortal Kombat, I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about. All right, buddy.
I'm sure if you saw the art for it or the character, you probably like it. You've probably seen something of it before, but you basically play as like this medieval knight, I guess. And the whole like plot is like you're supposed to save the princess, but apparently it was like extremely difficult because like basically the game looks like one of his animated movies. You know, and like you would come to like these sections of the game where like literally all you have to do is press like left or right to kind of make a decision as to where to go, and like timing matters and all that, and the main character can die in like a ton of different ways.
Yeah, it's like one giant quick time event.
Yeah, basically.
Go ahead. You finish that up, because this is about the release of this film, and I'm not quite sure what this means. I'm not smart enough to figure it out.
Yeah, so I was just going to finish off by saying, like, he directed three Dragon's Lair games. He also made a game that was, like, similar gameplay, but whole different, like, setup called Space Ace.
Space Ace.
Yeah, so.
Okay. But, so, this place, they actually got Wendy's offered toys with their kids' meals or regular fries from this movie. And they had a computer game adaptation for the Commodore Amiga system with a free software package. Giggity. So I'm going to read this to you, and you tell me what the fuck this means, Cody. Or Owen. It don't matter. It don't matter. None of this matters anymore. The film opened in North America on November 17th, 1989, concurrent with Disney's 28th full-length animated motion picture, The Little Mermaid, once again. Concurrent, does that mean they were released together?
Yeah, they released
at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're a package deal. You buy a ticket, you're seeing The Little Mermaid. And
No. It means that they were likely released on the same day. So basically they're just pointing it out because it was two competing animation studios releasing a major animation film on the same day.
Okay, now let me read this to you then. So it says, okay, after Disney's 28th Little Mermaid, 28th full-length picture, once again, Sylvan Bluth would be vying for box office receipts with Disney, just as their last two films, American Tale and The Land Before Time had. So that just means they were released in competition. It wasn't like a package deal, because I'm thinking like, man, hell, you're going to pay for a movie ticket, and the movie's only an hour and 20 minutes long. It doesn't seem like...
It just means that they were competing in the box office. Especially back then, I get an animated film was about 90 minutes is pretty much spot on for an animated film at the time. I mean, nowadays it's a lot more flexible. You do get more animated films that are like closer to 2 hours, but 90 minutes seems to be the standard. I mean, I know this is 80 minutes and not 90, but you know.
Now, real quick, Cody, since you were big on the animated movies during this time period, did you ever watch Anastasia?
Yeah, I did. That's another one I don't remember very well. But yeah, I did watch it.
That was a Don Bluth movie.
Yeah. I had it on VHS.
Did he come back to Disney or some shit?
No, I don't think so.
Not at this point. His thing, let me show you. There's a timeline on Wikipedia. I love it, Wikipedia. At Wikipedia. It says Walt Disney Productions 1955 to 1960 and 1970 to 1979. He was with Filmation 1967 to 1970 and 20th Century Fox 1993 to 2000. That was his employers. So this was like independently, like his studio did this movie, and they had, I can't remember who released it. Home Media. Hold on. I just saw this damn thing. Damn it.
Yeah, so that would have meant that
United Artists distributed this movie.
I wonder if that just the 20th Century Fox thing is that 20th Century Fox may have come in and bought his animation studio, because literally everything else that he released was with 20th Century Fox.
No, that's a good question. I don't know.
Which would explain why, you know, it doesn't list anything during that gap when, like, Secret of Nim, American Tale, Land Before Time, All Dogs Go to Heaven, and Rockadoodle were released. Thumbelina would have been the first film released under 20th Century Fox.
I'm just trying to read this shit. Let's see. Evidently, okay. Affiliation with Steven Spielberg. This is Mr. Don Bluth. Teaming up with producer Steven Spielberg, Belief's next project was An American Tale, which at the time of its release became the highest grossing non-Disney animated film of all time, grossing $45 million in the United States and over $84 worldwide. The second Spielberg and Belief collaboration, The Land Before Time, did even better in the theaters and both found a successful life on home video. So there's a Amblimation. Was the British animation production subsidiary of Amblin Entertainment, formed by Steven Spielberg in 1989. So him and Bluth, Spielberg and Bluth, you know, I guess disagreed after Land Before Time. They split off. So I don't know.
According to this, Don Bluth Entertainment shut down. It went bankrupt. And I guess he reopened a new studio under 20th Century Fox called Fox Animation Studios. Amblimation was actually responsible for a few of the direct sequels to Don Bluth movies that Don Bluth himself wasn't actually involved with. Okay, so like the sequel to American Tale called 5-0 Goes West. They also, I think Amblimation's probably, at least for me as a kid, their most recognizable film out of like the three that they made was Balto. But yeah, they apparently only made three theatrical films under Amblimation before it shut down.
Interesting. Well, I'm glad you had this kind of like background information because I did not. I guess now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the plot. All right, so the movie opens up with the opening kind of credits where they'll flash to something and it goes to dark and it says starring Burt Reynolds and flash to something starring Dom DeLuise. And I don't know why I find it so funny. They're over here arguing about the pipe that Itchy, which is Charlie's partner, and he's called Itchy because when he gets nervous, he starts itching everywhere. He's got this jackhammer, and they're going to dig on this pipe. And Charlie goes, "I think that's the water main." And he goes, no, that's not the water main. The water mains are green. This is red." He goes, "What are you talking about? It's green." He goes, "No, it's red." And they flop it. Like I can't remember how they say it, but they go, "This is red." He goes, "You're colorblind. You've always been colorblind." "Yeah, so it's red." He goes, "No, it's green." "No, I said it's green. This is red." And it's like, "What?" And then they bust the water main. And evidently the cops are like taking dogs breaking into whatever very seriously. No, he's digging them out of jail is what's happening. So it's the prison guards and they start shooting. You start seeing like a lot of explosions and like dogs almost getting hit. It's pretty funny. So
I don't understand right off the bat, I don't understand the social constructs of this world. Like, why?
They go to a pound, Louisiana, buddy. Fucking shoot you.
Why is there a jail for dogs? But then, there's just like a normal ass, like people everywhere. You know what I mean? Like, because even like after Charlie like breaks out and he goes back, they're like, "I thought you were on death row." You know, it's just like, it's like it's very clear. It's like, man, this is kind of like some heavy shit for kids, but it's just it's weird. Definitely, I don't understand, but you also got like,
think about this though. It's probably like, this is what a dog looks at it. It's probably just the pound. Because it's funny later on at the end of the movie when Itchy's going to all the dogs asking for help, and you hear him barking, and it goes to their conversation. It's like, "What's going on? Charlie's in trouble." But it goes pans back out. They're just barking at each other. It's really funny because it's like, you know, obviously the animals are the main part of this movie, but it's just funny. And it shows like later on, Itchy builds a fucking gambling a business out of like wrecked cars in the junkyard, and he's controlling a crane and all this shit. It's pretty fucking funny. It's pretty ridiculous. So opening scenes, you guys enjoy it? Thought it was funny. Cody said he's confused.
I like the setup for this movie because I really like the time period and stuff. I like the funny gangster people and shit.
Yeah, I didn't realize that this movie was like 1939, because all dogs go to heaven too, which Charlie and Itchy are both in heaven. That movie evidently takes place 60 years in the future, in the 1999. And obviously they don't have Anne-Marie's character anymore because it's, you know, to play, you know.
She's not, old as fuck.
Because her actress passed away. Yeah. And then I guess, I don't know how the movie plays out, but the movie, this is a direct, Charlie Sheen. This isn't Hollywood Undead. Charlie Sheen.
has got plays a that he loves to show.
Charlie Sheen plays Charlie in All Dogs Go to Heaven 2, which is a directed video movie, plus it's like a series pilot for the TV show, and then they have the TV show, and then there's like a Christmas special, which is the series finale, which really focuses on Carface, and I guess the dogs come back to life in the movie and in the show and stuff. I didn't watch those. But,
and they're walking around and they're rotting corpses.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like the dog. It's funny when they do. We'll get to that part. Remind me to talk about Charlie when he comes back. But
Charlie,
you can never come back. Shout out to Sarah. Shout out to Sarah, who's my co-assistant manager at the store, kind of co-conspirator too. She has a husband, and her husband's name is Charlie, and she says sometimes she'll mess with him. She goes, Charlie, you can never come back. So they'll talk about this movie. It's, you know, like I said, this movie is for an older generation. You know, this wasn't in the Disney wheelhouse, if you will, but you know, it doesn't get talked about enough, is why I wanted to pick it. Because I even picked, like, All Dogs Go to Heaven reaction videos on YouTube, and there's, like, four or five. And there's, like, one review video, and, like, nobody else talks about this movie, so.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's, like, a lesser known. I like the darker tone. I don't know why people were hating on that shit. I think it makes it interesting, at least. I can kind of see where some of the people were saying, like, you know, some, like, bits of the plot are kind of dropped a little bit, but I don't know. I like the darker tone so far. At this point in the movie, I like, you know, the drinking and the gambling and shit. It's cool. It's not something you see, like, in an animated movie.
Yeah, yeah. I like how, like, it's a rat race, and it's literally rats racing.
Yeah, it's a literal rat race. I like the stakes. I thought they were going to use the stakes more. Like, you know, use the stakes as money, but they just kind of ended up using actual money instead.
That was funny, though, when Carface is like, you can have half of it. He goes, half the T-bone? Mm-hmm. And then half of the filet mignon and all the other stuff. It's pretty funny. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Like, so, Charlie and Itchy go back to their old hangout, which you see a sign of it that says Carface and Charlie, and Charlie's name is scratched out. So, it was a business that Charlie set up with Carface, a gambling establishment in 1939 New Orleans. And it's in the swamps, and it says like no gators and all that stuff. It's kind of funny. And then you find out, like, through conversations that Carface has set up Charlie doesn't know that. That's why Charlie was in prison. Charlie comes out, and he wants to hang out, but Carface wants to get rid of him, so they end up tying Charlie up. Well, not really Charlie. They get Charlie drunk at Mardi Gras. And then they put they put Charlie in a blindfold as he's singing, "You can't keep a good dog down." And Carface and Killer, which is Carface's dumb assistant, are pushing this car down this boat dock to run over Charlie. And you hear Killer, like, laughing, like, and then Carface is like, "Killer, shut up. It's so fucking stupid. I always crack up at, like, every time he says shut up, and then when he does the whole, like, morons, I'm surrounded by morons.
Yeah.
Then Charlie goes to heaven.
Yeah, he dies. So. He just gets fucking killed.
And then but it doesn't show. It's kind of funny. It's like, you don't see his body go in the water, you just see the car go in the water. Charlie goes into heaven. All dogs go to heaven because all dogs are good. But then you look at Charlie's book, and it has all of his crimes listed and all the things he's done bad. And she's like, I'm having a hard time finding like anything you did well. And so they go into this like kind of song thing. It's not really a good song, I don't think. Them going back and forth. You can definitely tell Burt Reynolds is not a singer.
He gets outplayed in that shit. Like, yeah, in that one section.
I didn't really like any of the songs in this movie. They feel like very music together. No. They feel very like stage play, like Broadway. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. Did the Land Before Time have songs in it?
I don't remember the Land Before Time having songs in it, but
I don't remember American Tale having songs in it either. Seems like this might be. I was kind of surprised when they did start singing because I didn't remember this being a musical.
Yeah,
or having it's not even really that much of a
their Disney thing.
Yeah, it was. It's not even really that much of a musical, honestly. It's like, I mean, you know, it has songs in it, but it's not like a Disney movie.
I mean, it actually kind of is though, because like there's a song like every 5 minutes or so. Wow. Every five to ten minutes, there's a song in this film.
Yeah, this was his issue, like him trying to like do what Disney does. He probably has some kind of maybe lingering hatred towards Disney, and just kind of like, you know what, I can do what they do. You know, it's probably one of those things because he did have a success with Land Before Time, which was his movie before this one. So it's probably like,
I want to make a Disney movie, but I also want to show kids what hell looks like. So
I want a like crazy dragon monster that's fucking hovering over New Orleans to reclaim Charlie's soul. And then he fucking dies, by the way.
Again. It dies twice. Which is, yeah.
It's great to, the plot is kind of thin when you try to talk about it. When you get to like this point, like Charlie goes to heaven. They say that there's a watch, and it's like the gold watch of everybody's life. Like your clock stopped, yeah. It was your time. And he's like, he gets his watch, he winds it back, and he goes back to life. And when he comes back to life, like he has this kind of hint of gray to his fur at that point. Yeah. Like his whole body's just kind of grayish, like he's not fully alive, really. They don't really discuss that. There's only one issue, was one line where Itchy goes, and your hands are cold too. And there's only one line that is really like touching that, but he's really like, he's obviously not fully alive, you know, but he can die again. But there's just like, he comes back because he wants to get revenge on Carface. He's thinking to himself, like, there's no way Carface would have been this successful with the business while he was gone in prison. So he's trying to figure that out. And they find out that there's a little girl there played by Judith. The character's name is Anne Marie, who is a little girl that can talk to animals. So Carface is getting her to talk to all the animals that are in his races, like his rat race or whatever else he does. And then finding out which one's going to win the race, he fixes the odds to where no one's going to win. And, you know, that's how he's kept all the money at the house and build the place back up and how he's all rich. So Charlie and Itchy are going to get her and do the same thing. But it's funny, Charlie goes, when he sees, like, I'm going to abduct her. I mean, save her. All Charlie's thinking about is the money. And there's another scene once they get her out of there. They go to their car in the junkyard. And he's reading, quote unquote, Robin Hood to her, and it's War and Peace, and he's reading it like sideways. I get caught off guard because I never really pay attention to that scene, and I look at it, he's holding the book sideways, it's War and Peace, and she's like, and did Robin Hood marry her, Charlie? He goes, yeah. And then she looks at a picture, and she makes it like they look beautiful together. It's two guys fighting on a horseback in England.
Yeah, well, the question she asks him is like, and how beautiful was he? And she's like, he's like, oh, just stunning. And then it shows that picture. And it's like,
oh God. And he just throws the book behind him. He goes, and he won, you know? It's like, it's great. And then you have like moments throughout this movie showing how innocent and pure Anne Marie is, because, you know, she doesn't have parents and that's all she really wants. And Charlie promises to get her parents. Obviously, he's just trying to use her to win all this money and then build a business so he can keep making money. And then you, like, they get to a horse race. And she's talking to one of the horses, and they ask her. This is, like, when she's starting to see that Charlie is, like, just like Carface. That's all he's using her for.
Yeah.
He goes, oh, come on. Would Carface read you a bedtime story? Would he kiss you goodnight and all this stuff? And she's like, look, we'll win all this money. We'll get you some dresses. We'll find you some parents. She goes, okay, Charlie. And it's very trusting, because that's all she really wants is a family. And she's talking. They say it's going to be the Grand Charlie. And you look over there, and it's just kind of mentally unstable, goofy-ass looking horse with flies all around it. Very skinny. Like, there wouldn't be any reason this horse would win. And it's the horse's birthday. Why they're going to do it. So, they go up there, and it's really ridiculous. Charlie is on the bottom, Itchy's on top, and then she's on top of their shoulders with a fake mustache with a big trench coat, pretend to be a guy to place the bets. And I swear, like, when the Charlie wins, because you have that one horse that's racing and doesn't realize it, and the other horse runs up to him and goes, do you know it's the Grand Charlie's birthday? He goes, oh, okay. I'm sorry. So he pulls back, and he literally shoves his head up the Charhee's ass and races him to the finish line. Charhee's looking around with his tongue out, waving at people, and he gets thrown over the line. It's fucking great. I find so much humor in that little scene, just how stupid that horse is. So they go around, and Anne-Marie is winning them a bunch of money, because they go to a frog race, a kangaroo fight, and something else. I can't remember which one it is. And as they're winning all this money, though, you can see how unhappy Anne-Marie is. And I skipped over this part, but the money they get for the horse race, they steal from this couple who are really nice, and they play an important part later on. Yeah. So we got any thoughts at this point, guys?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I was still digging it at this point. At this point, I don't know. I feel like it was a kind of like, you know, how a lot of the critics did say it kind of had dropped its plot points a little bit there. I thought they would focus a little bit more on him. I don't know, having the second chance or something like that, but I don't know.
Well, that's the thing, is he like kind of just throws a second chance away, right? He doesn't really think of it as like a second chance. He kind of probably thinks of it as, I've cheated death, you know? So,
yeah. I guess, well, I like, more, so in the story, like, I guess ahead, if his it. Clock stopped, he would just rewind it, because he has it in his hand, right? Well, so I think he can live forever.
Well, isn't the thing that if he's separated from it too long, it stops ticking? So, like, he'll be alive as long as he keeps it on him, because that's what kills him in the end, right? Is, like, he gets separated from it, and he chooses to save Anne Marie. But he doesn't get back to the watch in time, and it stops, and he dies.
The watch stops at the end, not because it's separated from, because it fills up with water. You see the mechanism filling it with water at the end. And he's right. Just keeping the watch on him at all times, because it's safe keeping, and it's going to be on him, because he knows that it can get damaged anywhere else. Obviously, when they fight, quote-unquote, with the big gator. So, you know. All right, so I'm trying to think. There's kind of a, like they end up building a gambling establishment for Charlie's crew. And I think Charlie, like you guys were talking about it, like, I think Charlie obviously doesn't care that this is a second chance of life. He wants to get back at Carface and experience the success that he was robbed of. Because it feels like during the story, it's implied that before they're able to achieve success, he was put away.
Yeah,
like in prison. So it's one of those things that, you know, obviously Charlie's well liked by everybody, and Carface isn't. But that's when the little girl Anne-Marie finds the wallet that they stole the money from, was the couple she talked to, She goes to them. They feed her breakfast. They return her the wallet. And they seem like a really great couple and all that stuff. And then Charlie's faking that he's sick and dying, so she'll come back to him because he needs to win a few more races. Because, you know, obviously it's never going to be enough for him. But you get to the point where I don't even know how they get captured. Like, by the the little rats in the sewer, and they get sacrificed to the gator. I don't even know what the fuck happened there. I can't remember.
Well, I don't remember how they get captured. Or aren't they being chased by Carface's goons or something, and then, like, the floor collapses, and they go down into the sewer where
they fall down in the sewer, and then, and then you have these little rats, got them tied up in cages, and they're like, hoo-ha, as they're carrying them to the sacrifice range for this big gator.
Yeah, so he's like, then, he's like, talk to them, see what they want. He's like, I can't, they talk funny.
And then you find out, oh, there's this big gator that comes up that's going to eat Charlie, and Charlie lets out this, like, really high-pitched noise, and then the gator's like, how can I eat a voice this wonderful? And then they start singing, and it's like, let's make music together.
I like the sound it makes when they're under the water.
Oh, yeah, it's like, let's make music together. I always love that part, too, when they're singing under the water. And then, so the gator is, like, the gator escorts them out. And then you see that Anne-Marie is sick. She's starting to cough and stuff like that. But they really don't touch on that issue that much, other than the fact that, you know, they need to get her back to go see a doctor or something like that. But Charlie's just kind of, like, more focused on getting her well so he can win more races or whatever. And then Itchy gets beat up by Carface and his goons. And Carface and his goons blow up their establishment. And then Itchy's just like, yeah, I think we should go now. Like, we shouldn't be here. We should just, like, go off and go somewhere new. And Charlie goes, we gotta use the girl. We gotta build the place back up. Like, that's all Charlie's concerned about is building the place back up so he can be successful.
Yeah.
And, you know, he sees, like, and of course, I don't think he truly, like, just doesn't care about Anne-Marie. But I think, he gets pushed to the limit, though, by Itchy. Itchy's like, why do you care so much about the girl? And he's like, I don't care about her. And he goes, like, hard the opposite direction, like, saying, like, I'm just using her, and we'll put her in an orphanage when we're done.
Yeah.
And then she's all depressed and all that stuff, and she gets kidnapped by Carface. So, the final confrontation, Charlie's, like, tied up to a ship anchor, I think. And then he's, like, it's a whole thing. He's dropped. I can't remember how the whole... I just watched this thing, like, an hour ago. Because I always forget this part because the ending always gets me, period. And, yeah, so Charlie, you know, the gator shows up because he hears him howl one more time. The gator shows up, lets Charlie go, and chases after Carface after he gets into the water. And that part, he goes, scrumptious. And then Carface is like, and he tries to swim away, and you just assume the gator's going to get him. Well, at this point, Charlie has to save Anne-Marie because she's floating on a box in, like, this big marina of water that's crashed into this area that they were at.
Yeah.
And so she falls into the water. He goes to get after her. He drops his watch. He puts her on the box and pushes her out. And as he's swimming to get the watch stops, and his life ends again. But you don't see that. And you just see later on that Anne-Marie is at the house with the couple that you see earlier in the movie, and that feeds her breakfast. And Charlie comes
with
back.
With Itchy, right? Like, Itchy's there.
Yeah,
right?
Well, Itchy comes up and falls asleep on her because he's so exhausted.
Why does Itchy, like, go for, like, why does he, when does he eventually not stop hating the girl? Like, I don't.
Well, I think it's just, like, Charlie's gone at that point. They don't really dive into it that much.
Oh. Yeah, it's just, I guess it's just.
I thought it was weird that he even did. Like, I feel like, you know, he was, like, I feel like that kind of buddy character would definitely be the one who's, like, looking out for, like, the little girl while the, like main guy is kind of being a dickhead. I don't know.
Yeah, this movie does, like, you know, I think Itchy represents like Itchy doesn't like lie really. He just kind of like this is his intentions and like take or leave it as a sidekick, obviously. And then Charlie's the one that's the schemer and also the one that can pretend. It's kind of a weird dynamic, and it's different than like the stereotypical like thing you get in animated movies, you know. But yeah, at the end, so Charlie comes down and the sky is red, so it's assuming that Charlie is going to hell, dog hell, because he has a vision of the dog hell earlier, and it's like this kind of cool ass fucking boat in a pit of lava. And he got these little demon dogs that are like got bat wings and shit like that. It's pretty funny. And then you talk
about the pizza.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Puppies. Like Charlie does have one redeeming quality about himself, that he cares about these little dogs that this like
that he goes and visits his kids every now and then.
Yeah. Are they his kids or are they just random little dogs?
I think they're supposed to be.
Yeah, they're just
dogs,
I think they're just random little dogs.
They're just little bastards.
But it does kind of come off a little bit like, oh, he's going to visit his baby mama with all their pups running around.
They're all different breeds too. Because I always thought about that as a kid though too. It's like, well, that's obviously his girlfriend. These are his kids. And it's like, no, that's not. They call him Uncle Charlie. So yeah, maybe he's just hitting it a little bit, and they think he's Uncle Charlie. But so at the end of the movie, Charlie is like, you know, I'm saying he you know feels remorse, and he's like, I'm sorry, Squeaker. And you see this big, like, demon dog in the corner of the sky, and everything's red. And you see this little blue dot come from heaven and turn everything back to normal. And the demon dog goes away. And he goes, Charlie, you can come home now. And he goes, but I thought you said, because you know, she kept saying you can never come back, because obviously he was a bad dog and he stole the watch. He goes, you gave your life for her. You're a good dog. So then they have this really, like, I'll have Cody play it at the end of this episode. This little exchange, where it's just like, goodbyes aren't forever. And it kind of hits harder now knowing that this little girl had passed away a year and a half before this movie was released. And he's like, will we ever see each other again? It's like, of course, you know? And it's kind of this emotional. Like, the first time I rewatched it, I cried. I didn't cry this time, but I did cry. My Savannah, she cried watching it too. So, yeah, I'm salty for this movie. And then that's the end. You see car faces in heaven at the end, and, you know, they're singing some kind of like, it feels like some very, like, how do I say this? Like, gospel-like music. It's kind of, like, upbeat and shit like that. It's a pretty good little ending song. But Carface steals a watch, and he starts rewinding it back, and she goes, oh, no, Carface, you can't do that. And he's like, shut up.
Yeah.
And then she starts chasing him, and he goes, he'll be back. So, yeah, that's the end of the movie.
So he's going to go back to heaven? Is that what that means?
Well, he says he'll be back. She says, you can never come back. She's telling him the same thing. He goes, oh, he'll be back.
Dude, he's going to redeem himself.
Maybe so, I should have been so mean.
Yeah, he's like, killer, I'm so sorry. You can have 100% of the business.
Yeah, this was a good little movie about, you know, betrayal and moita. It's all about betrayal and moita.
But, you know, I'm not going to lie to you. I do, as simple as this is, because I'm still a kid, I still enjoy the part where he goes, morons! I'm surrounded by morons! It's like, you know, I feel that way at my job sometimes. So, that's the end of All Dogs Go to Heaven. Like I said, this spawned a direct-to-video sequel with a lot of the voice actors returning except for Burt Reynolds, and like, I think this is 96. Cartoon series came out in 98, and then the series finale / Christmas special came out like 99 probably, and that was the end of it. No one's went back to remake this movie, surprisingly, and nobody has done any more continuations of it really. So that's it. I'm gonna go ahead and push it around everybody and go, look, did you like this movie? Would you recommend it? So I'm going to start with Cody, because I feel like Cody's going to be super negative, because he always is. Cody, did you like the movie, and would you recommend it?
Yeah, I did like it. Like I said, the only thing I really didn't like was the music. I think the music is just a little too Broadway. But I think
I was thinking you were about to shit on Angelodia, but I mean,
no, I think that the animation's really good. I think that there's just a couple little weird things. Like there's like a random like spiral transition in one point. It's like, why is this here? Because this literally hasn't happened for like in the first half of this movie. It's just a little odd choices like that. But overall, the movie's good. I do recommend watching it. So,
hell yeah, I like that, man. That's what I'm talking about. Owen, sir, would you recommend this movie, and did you like it?
Yeah, you know, I'd recommend it. I thought it was all right for what it was. I thought it was a pretty solid, just little family movie. That was just kind of a good little watch. You know, like maybe one time or something if you'd like. Yeah, I don't know why everybody was so negative about it. It seems like it's a pretty decent movie.
I feel like that as it goes, you know, the tribalism that's been more highlighted with movie franchises and especially like sports and all that kind of stuff, and obviously politics, the tribalism online that you see, I think has always been there. So I think that this movie comes out and it's competing with a Disney movie. I know Disney wasn't the powerhouse it was then. Now. But yeah, I think people looked at it as like it's lesser than and didn't give it a chance.
Well, you got to think, at the time, this was also, you know, you said this released concurrently with The Little Mermaid, and The Little Mermaid was really the start of the Renaissance for Disney, because for, I don't know, the better part of a decade or more, they weren't really doing all that hot.
I didn't realize that was the start of it, like, reigniting.
Yeah. Little Mermaid was, like, what kicked off, like, the big, like, rejuvenation of Disney animation. So, it's perfectly reasonable that people would go to the theater and be like, oh, well, the last few Disney movies we've seen haven't been that good, so I'm going to go see this All Dogs Go to Heaven instead, you know.
And, you know, another thing, too, is like, going to the movies was a grown-up thing for, like, you know, when I was a kid. Like, you know, you went to movies, though, but kids are usually loud and noisy. And obviously, now when you go to the movies, people have their kids that are loud and noisy. So I think that it's like you have one or the other, and you're going to pick The Little Mermaid because everybody says it's a great movie. And I think, you know, it had good reviews and stuff like that. So let's go see The Little Mermaid. Right. And after going through the nightmare experience of watching this movie with your kid in a movie theater, you're thinking, okay, we're not going back. We're not going. We are not doing this again. We'll watch All Dogs Go to Heaven when it gets on VHS or on pay-per-view or whatever.
Pay-per-view.
So it's, you know. Yeah. So it's that's what HBO kind of was at the time.
Yeah, I know. I just find it funny because, like, in my mind now, I just associate pay per view with like wrestling pay per views or like UFC pay per views. But
what's funny is like they're not even called pay per views anymore. Wrestling, they're called premium live events,
right?
Because they're getting filmed and obviously you're not paying to watch them anymore. So pay per view is kind of like, it's just specifically a UFC or boxing thing now. That's all it is.
Yeah,
but
and AEW, right? So,
yeah, they do have it. Yeah, they do. They only have like 5 pay per views a year, though. So,
right,
which is good because they kind of spread it out. But their pay per views are like 5 hours long, I've been told, and I'm just like, man, that's a lot. I know. I mean, I just I don't like, you know, I have disagreements with Alex, who's probably our number one listener. You know, he likes WrestleMania being like 3 or 4 hours and on 2 days. I miss WrestleMania being a 1 4-hour event or 3-hour event that, you know, you had the best of the best. I don't need a lot of fucking filler and shit, you know?
Yeah.
So I miss WrestleMania being like, it just feels like, okay, WrestleMania night one, WrestleMania night two. I miss it being like WrestleMania, like one night, this is the event. This is what we're going to do. But it doesn't look like they're ever going to bring it back to that. It's just going to be a 2-night thing. But real quick, let me go ahead and get my thing. I loved this movie as a kid. I would still love this movie from a nostalgia perspective. Probably not as much as a kid. And, I mean, I really like it. It's not something I'm going to rewatch once a month. But I'd watch it once every couple months. Just, you know, just because it's fun. It's one of those movies I just really enjoyed. And, again, there's probably a part of me that's that likes the fact that not many people talk about this movie, because it kind of feels like it's mine. Like, you go talking to somebody, it's like, you know, hey, I just got done watching The Little Mermaid. Well, everybody watched that. Well, no, I watched Little Dogs Go to Heaven, and that's my thing. It's kind of like when I was a teenager and everybody was really into Slipknot, and I picked Mudvayne, and nobody talked about Mudvayne. I'm like, yeah, this is my shit. So, yeah, I definitely recommend this movie. Like, two thumbs up. I think it's great. And I appreciate you guys watching this movie. It's kind of nice watching a movie that's only an hour and 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
Because the next movie we're going to watch is going to be fucking 4 hours long, called Once Upon a Time in the West, okay? No, I'm joking. that's it for my coverage of this movie. Like I said, the ending scene kind of hits harder now as I think about it, as we're talking about it, because I still didn't make the connection. And I always just think about, like, oh, your dog passes away, you know, or your animal does. And Travis Barker, drummer of Blink-182, he's currently married to a Kardashian. I guess he had this French bulldog that lived almost 20 years. And the dog just passed away, and his daughter posted a TikTok, which I saw, like, I guess Loudwire, one of those accounts, posted it, and I watched it because I don't have TikTok. And they played the clip from All Dogs Go to Heaven, him saying, it's like, Charlie, am I ever see you again? He's like, of course. Goodbyes aren't forever. And it's like, damn, that's such a good ending. And, but then to realize that the little girl played Anne Marie's passed away, it's kind of like, wow, that even hits even harder a little bit. So, So the next movie will be Owens. Am I correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Owen, sir, what movie are we doing next?
All right, I got it pinned down to two. I figured I'd ask you guys to see maybe which one you guys prefer. So I've been thinking between either Who Framed Roger Rabbit or The Big Lebowski.
And those God, The Big Lebowski, please.
I think I was going to say Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Okay, look. All right, I'm going to flip a coin. Give me a second.
Okay, because I've watched The Big Lebowski. Like, I've never seen it all together, and that movie's fucking hilarious.
But I had to watch it for film class in college. Oh, really? Yeah.
I haven't watched it in a while. I watched Who Framed Roger Rabbit not too long ago. All right, so here's my coin. It's a penny because I don't have any quarters because I'm poor. So we'll say heads, Roger Rabbit; tails, Big Lebowski. All right, give me a sec. All right,
okay.
Shit, I threw it like way over. looks like it landed on heads. Which one was heads again?
Roger Rabbit.
All right, then I guess we're doing Roger Rabbit.
All right.
Then, well, we'll continue this conversation off air because I'm going to have to use the bathroom. Everybody, thank you for listening to Filmoscopy, and I'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Now you go to sleep.
Charlie, will I ever see you again?
Sure. Sure you will, kid. You know, goodbyes aren't forever.
Then, goodbye, Charlie. I love you.